want to do today is talk a little bit about whole canopy or plant gas exchange measurements and see what physiological information you can get from those kinds of measurements. And I just want to start with a very simple basic introduction. Hopefully we all know that plants contain about 40% carbon, 45% oxygen, 6% hydrogen. So total, these three elements make up about 90% of all the dry matter in a plant. And this all gets into the plant through photosynthesis. So if you really want to study plant growth, what you do need to understand is photosynthetic processes. Now, unfortunately, there is lots of evidence in the literature that shows that leaf photosynthesis and plant growth are often very poorly correlated to each other. And these are some data from a study that I did several years ago, growing plants in hydroponics with different fertilizer concentrations in the hydroponics. And what you can see in this graph is the leaf photosynthetic rate on the y-axis plotted here as a function of the dry rate of the plants at the end of the study. And interestingly enough, what we actually found in this particular study was that, if anything, there was a negative correlation here between leaf photosynthesis and the dry rate of the plants. And it turned out that in this particular case, that was largely due to dry matter allocation. Plants that were grown with very low concentrations of nutrient solution still had a high photosynthetic rate, but they were allocating all of that dry matter below ground to make a larger root system. And they didn't produce a lot of leaves, and that slowed down the growth of those plants. And the problem with leaf photosynthesis measurements is mainly that if you want to understand how that affects plant growth, what you are not taking into account when you're collecting leaf photosynthesis data is the carbon allocation within the plant. And that explained a big part of this, the data on the previous slide. You don't know how much leaf area is being made from these carbohydrates that are produced in photosynthesis. Very often people don't take into account respiratory carbon losses, and that can make up anywhere from 30 to 70% of the carbohydrates fixed in photosynthesis may be lost through respiration. So that is a very important component. Temporal changes in gas exchange are often ignored, as well as spatial changes. A canopy certainly isn't uniform, and not all the plant, all the leaves on one plant are photosynthesizing at the same rate. And then finally, when people collect leaf photosynthesis data, it is very common to measure light-saturated photosynthesis. Well, plants don't always grow under light-saturated conditions, and not all the leaves on a plant are light-saturated. So there are lots of reasons why leaf photosynthesis and plant growth or yield may not correlate very well. And this is actually nothing new. As much as 30 years ago, Lloyd Evans published a paper where he talked about the fact that there was little experimental evidence of any positive relationship between yield and leaf photosynthetic rate. In 1980, Elmore wrote a review article also talking about the paradox of no correlation between leaf photosynthetic rates and crop yields. And actually, at that point in time, in the literature, some people were starting to suggest that leaf photosynthesis is not important for plant growth. And that's an interesting hypothesis, but if leaf photosynthesis doesn't affect growth, then I'm not sure how plants do grow. So in 1982, Zeilich wrote a much more informative review article, and what he said was that crop yield is closely related to the net photosynthetic assimilation of CO2. But you have to measure assimilation rates throughout the entire readings, entire season. Instantaneous measurements can be highly misleading. And in addition, he made a very strong argument that instead of measuring leaf photosynthesis, what you really should be measuring is canopy photosynthesis or whole plant photosynthesis. You need to go to a larger scale if you want to find a correlation between photosynthesis and plant growth. So those are some of the things that I want to talk about today. When you measure whole plant or canopy photosynthesis, you're basically measuring how much carbon is being incorporated into the plant. And if you can collect these kinds of data continuously throughout the course of a growing season, you can determine the net carbon gain of a crop. Net carbon gain is basically an indirect measure of plant growth rate. If you do know the daily net carbon gain, you can also calculate the cumulative carbon gain over the course of the entire growing season. And when you do that, the cumulative carbon gain is basically an indicator of the increase in dry mass throughout that growing season. And so these two diagrams basically indicate what daily photosynthetic rates or CO2 exchange rates might look like in a controlled environment. And this is obviously an oversimplification, but just to make the point, in the darkness you have a net CO2 loss from the plants, respiration. When the lights come on, you can't see the bars that indicate darkness and light very well in this room right here. But as soon as the lights come on, photosynthetic rates become positive, the plant starts fixing carbon, the lights go off again, and you have respiration rates. Now, if you have these kinds of data, what you can do is very easily calculate the daily carbon gain of the plant. And the daily carbon gain is simply this area right here, area 1, the net CO2 fixed during the daytime minus the net, sorry, let's see if I can go back, minus the amount of carbon that is lost at night. So you can calculate daily carbon gain very easily if you have continuous CO2 exchange measurements. And then you can use those kinds of data to calculate the cumulative carbon gain, and this is just an example of what can happen over a 2-week period of cumulative carbon gain, where you see that during the daytime, the cumulative carbon gain of the plants goes up because the plants are photosynthesizing. At night, you have a small decrease again in carbon gain of the plants because the plants are losing carbon through respiration. So by doing these kinds of measurements, you can basically track changes in dry matter of the plant in real time. If you then look at the cumulative carbon gain data, here shown on the x-axis, at the end of an experiment, what you will hopefully find is that your cumulative carbon gain is closely correlated to the dry rate of the plants. And in this case, that was definitely the case, a very strong positive correlation. And what you can also do with these kinds of data is that the intercept of this equation right here is an estimate of the dry rate of the plants at the start of your experiment, while you can use the slope of the line to actually get an estimate of the carbon content of the plants that you're growing. And then if you analyze your plant tissue for carbon at the end of the experiment, you can see how well your gas exchange measurements actually correlate with the actual plant growth data that you collect at the very end. So hopefully from this slide right here, it's clear that if you do measure cumulative carbon gain, you can get a very good indication of plant growth rate. So that just indicates extrapolating to the y-axis to get an estimate of the initial dry mass. Just a few pictures of different systems in which people do whole plant gas exchange. I'm in horticulture now. I generally work with bedding plants, so I have a relatively small system because I work with very small plants. This is a tray of pansies right here with plants grown inside of a growth chamber, which allows for relatively easy environmental control. But for a much larger system, this is a system that is used at Cornell to look at fruit crops. And this is a very interesting system that is used by Fred Davies at Texas A&M, where they can actually control not just the CO2 concentration, the oxygen concentration, but also the pressure in all of those chambers. And I believe that Mike Dixon has a fairly similar system that is much bigger than this at Guelph. And we've already heard about the spar chambers. This is just a picture of this. So you can see that different people are doing these kinds of studies at different scales and in different environments. What I want to focus on today is data interpretation. What can you do with whole plant gas exchange measurements? I feel very strongly that whole plant or canopy gas exchange measurements are a greatly underused tool. I think it's very powerful. But there are some difficulties that you have to keep in mind when you're collecting these kinds of data. One issue is root zone respiration. And I'll go into that in some more detail in just a minute. And then estimates of gross photosynthesis, and that is related to how do you know how much the plants are respiring in the light. When you think about root zone respiration, you can basically separate that into three different categories. First, you have the roots, which are respiring themselves. But secondly, you have the roots exuding organic compounds, and they get broken down by microbes in the soil. And finally, you may just have organic matter in the soil that has nothing to do with the plant that you're measuring, but that is also being broken down by microbes in the soil. So with regard to root respiration, if you're interested in plant growth, that's fairly straightforward. You need to include root respiration if you want to know the whole plant carbon balance. That's not always easy to do if you're working with field-grown plants, though. Microbial respiration of root exudates is a little bit more of a tricky issue, in my opinion, because it depends to some extent what the real objective of your study is. If you're interested in growth, then, in my opinion, you should include measurements of microbial respiration of root exudates in your whole plant carbon balance, because these are organic compounds that are leaking out from your plants and that are being broken down then by microbes. But those carbohydrates, those exudates, are carbon losses from the plant. On the other hand, if you're mainly interested in studying respiratory processes and how much ATP or NADH may be produced from those, you may not want to include the respiration of root exudates, because those don't provide any energy to the plant. So that may depend to some extent on the objectives of your studies. And then finally, you have the microbial breakdown of organic matter in the soil. If you're interested in plant growth, microbial breakdown of soil organic matter has nothing to do with how quickly the plant itself is growing. So that is something that, in most cases, I think you would want to minimize if you're specifically interested in measuring plant growth. To do that, you basically need to minimize use of soils with high organic matter. Most of my work and many other people are actually using soilless substrates in controlled environments to do these kinds of studies. And an issue with soilless substrates is that they are made up of normally 60% organic matter. Based on my experience, what you really want to minimize is the use of any substrate that contains pine bark, which is a very common component. But pine bark is still composting and it breaks down fairly quickly. Substrates that are made out of coconut core or peat are much more stable, and that minimizes any microbial breakdown or the effects thereof. And then finally, you could simply go to hydroponics, where you don't have to worry about any organic matter in the soil. So there are some solutions to dealing with that. The other issue is, how do you estimate gross photosynthesis? To get an estimate of gross photosynthesis, basically what you need to do is measure net photosynthesis during the light period, and then the respiration during the light period. But what you're actually measuring is net photosynthesis and respiration during the dark period. So the question then becomes, how do you know how much plants are respiring in the light? It's fairly common to simply assume that respiration in the dark is the same as it is during the light period, and then you can estimate gross photosynthesis as the sum of net photosynthesis and dark respiration. Now, when you look at the literature and look at the effects of light on respiration, there seems to be a consensus that leaf respiration is inhibited by light. In 2005, Wolfart did a review article, and they cite papers that show an inhibition of leaf respiration in the light anywhere from 15 to 100%. Now, 100% seems highly unlikely, because that would mean that leaves are not respiring at all during the daytime, but it basically shows the wide range of measurements of data that we have in the literature indicating how much leaves are respiring during the daytime. Then there was a very innovative paper in 2001 by Laurito and co-workers, where they used an ERGA that could measure different isotopes of carbon, and they found that respiration of leaves in the light is not affected at all. It's the same in the light and the dark. And if you look at the literature, you can also find plenty of articles actually that will argue that leaf respiration increases during light. And that's just for the leaves. Oscar and Bruce Bugby together did a study where they showed that root respiration is increased in the light, and that's presumably because of more carbohydrate availability. But the bottom line, from what I can gather at least, is that we don't really know how whole plant is really affected by light. If you look at the literature, you can make any case you want to by picking the data that you like. So in 2003, Roger Gifford concluded that it now appears that the assumption usually adopted in whole plant and ecological studies of autotrophic respiration continuing by day as by night may be correct. Now, I think that may be a little bit of an overstatement, but I think the bottom line is that we don't really know how respiration changes between light and dark. And as long as we don't have a really good feeling for that, I think just the assumption that respiration is the same in the light and in the dark is probably as good as any other assumption. Now, if you're willing to assume that, you can simply calculate gross photosynthesis as the sum of daytime net photosynthesis and nighttime respiration. And then what you can do, if you have continuous gas exchange data, is calculate the carbon use efficiency of the plants, which is the fraction of carbohydrates that are produced in gross photosynthesis that actually get incorporated into plant material. So this gives an indication of how much carbohydrates are actually respired. And the way that you do that from gas exchange data is by looking at the area 1 minus area 2 in this slide right here, which shows the net amount of carbon that gets incorporated into the plant. And if you have area 1 plus area 3, that is the net amount of carbon produced during the light period. So the ratio between those gives you the carbon use efficiency. You can also determine the canopy quantum yield, which is the moles of carbon that are fixed divided by the moles of light that is absorbed by the canopy. And Oscar and Bruce probably recognize this graph because it's data from a place where the Tate published. I just want to go very quickly through two different studies that look at different physiological parameters. This is a study done with wheat for 65 days grown at high or low CO2. And what they found is that the photosynthetic rate, not surprisingly, was higher at high CO2 than it was at low CO2. And at the same time, that resulted in a higher growth rate, especially during the middle part of the growing period at high CO2. But they also then looked at the physiological reasons for this difference in growth. And carbon use efficiency was fairly similar in the high and low CO2, so that could not explain the effect on growth. Radiation capture in the top graph, also not drastically different between the two treatments. But when you look at the bottom graph, the quantum yield, the efficiency with which the plants were using light to fix carbon, was greatly affected and higher at high CO2 levels, presumably because the high CO2 is minimizing photorespiration, while at the same time overcoming stomatal limitations to photosynthesis. So canopy quantum yield in this case explained most of the differences between the two CO2 treatments. Another thing that you can do with these kinds of measurements is get estimates of growth and maintenance respiration. The principle behind that is that during the daytime, the plant is making a certain amount of photosynthates, and it needs to use a certain fraction of those photosynthates just to keep itself alive for maintenance respiration. And maintenance respiration can be estimated from the dry weight and a maintenance respiration coefficient. Of the carbohydrates that are not used for maintenance respiration, and those carbohydrates can be allocated to growth processes. With growth, a certain amount of those carbohydrates actually gets incorporated into biomass, while another fraction of those carbohydrates is needed to provide the energy for the biochemistry of the growth processes, and that is growth respiration. And growth respiration can be estimated as a function of the growth rate of the plant and the growth respiration coefficient. So basically, when you look at total respiration, this equation describes how you can look at that mathematically. And much of this research was started by McCree a long time ago, but basically the bottom line is that if you plot the specific respiration rate of a plant or a canopy versus the relative growth rate, then the intercept is the maintenance respiration coefficient, and the slope of the line is the growth respiration coefficient, if you are willing to assume that the growth and maintenance coefficients are constant. That's an assumption that actually nobody ever seems to check. That is something that always seems to be taken for granted. So this shows the data from a study I did with marigolds. They were grown for a little bit over 60 days. Shows the gas the photosynthetic rates here during that period. Plants grew better at 30 than at 20 degrees C, dark respiration measurements for that same period. And from the photosynthetic and respiration measurements, I was able to calculate the growth rate. And by integrating the growth rate over time, I could estimate the dry weight of these plants during the whole course of the experiment, I analyzed the plants for carbon at the end of the study, so that allowed me to convert carbon content to actual dry weight of the plants. So now I could calculate the relative growth rate as the growth rate divided by the dry weight, as well as the specific respiration rate throughout the course of the entire experiment. So this shows what happened to relative growth rate, decreased over time. Not surprisingly, that's a normal response. Specific respiration rate, likewise, decreased over time. That's also fairly common. Interestingly enough, we found actually that the specific respiration rate was lower at 30 degrees than it was at 20 degrees. The reason for that is actually that there are large differences in plant size. But then, when I plotted specific respiration versus relative growth rate, that allowed me to estimate the maintenance coefficients at the two different temperatures, as well from the slope of the line, the growth respiration coefficients. And what we found that, is that the maintenance coefficient was increased under high temperatures, while the growth respiration coefficient was decreased under high temperatures. Both of those were highly significant effects. Then from those data, you can then also calculate the actual amount of growth and maintenance respiration through the course of the study just by multiplying the maintenance coefficient times the dry mass and the growth coefficient times the growth rate. So now you can get a pretty good idea of how plants are allocating the carbohydrates that are going to respiration to growth and maintenance components of respiration. So in conclusion, I think that we need to do more whole plant gas exchange or canopy gas exchange, because that is really a direct indicator of growth. I think leaf photosynthesis measurements have that place, but you have to be very careful if you want to extrapolate from leaf photosynthesis to plant growth, canopy growth, and eventually crop yields. And some unique things that you can do with whole plant gas exchange measurements is that you can get at some pretty interesting physiological components of growth, as I've shown in this presentation: carbon use efficiency, quantum yield, growth respiration, and maintenance respiration. And with that, I'm going to stop.